What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Tuesday, October 30th, 2018. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside the new host of Podcast Beyond, Jonathan Dornbush.
Hello. Thank you.
How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
Now you see how a real organization runs.
It's pretty impressive.
I had to come to this new IGN the other day, guys, and do Podcast Beyond. Do you know, Kevin, they have tally lights now? That you know what camera you're supposed to look at just by looking at the light on the thing?
Shut up, dude.
I don't know what it was like to be shoved in the podcast room in there.
Courtney paid for all of it himself.
Yeah.
He's destitute now, but yeah.
He's great.
He can't afford that. On an IGN salary, you can't afford those kind of lights over there.
I miss that Alexio kid, too.
You know what? Yeah. You can go now. Go get beer for the Halloween party. You go. All right? This is Cool Greg's show right now. Cool Greg, is that correct? That's right.
Yeah.
How you doing, Dornbush?
I'm doing pretty well. It's been so long since we last saw each other.
I know, right? Obviously, we were joking around about that when you got here, of the fact that I think we never get to work to each other together, and then now twice in like 1 week, pretty much.
Which is great. Yeah. Again, thank you so much for being on the show last week. Had a blast, and thank you for having me
here. Thanks for having me on. No, please. Thank you for having me on last week. Thank you for coming on today.
Well, thank you for being on the show last week.
No, but not you. That was a lot of fun to come back to be on, and the reaction was great. I was happy to see so many people tune in and say Beyond and say, you know, they're going to give you a shot and they're going to listen, or they've always been listening and stuff like that. That's awesome.
We'll give it a shot, and then there's too then much Kingdom
pass.
Hearts.
Brian still says, brap, I'm out of here.
Oh, no, I canceled that.
Oh, good job.
All right, not allowed to.
Rule with an iron fist, as they say.
I punch him if it happens.
Whoa, I don't suggest that. He's got a daughter now. You got to be careful.
Yeah, no, I should have thought of that. Oh, well.
If you didn't know, ladies and gentlemen, this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday in a variety of video game platform formats, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. Man, I was all over the place on that one. I got loose because I just tossed video games in there. I was having too much fun with you. If you like that, be part of the show, kindoffunny.com/KFGD with questions, comments, concerns, bad PSN names for a little bit longer, and everything else under the video game sun. Then watch us record it live, twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. If you're watching live, you have a special job. Go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong and tell us what we screw up as we screw it up so we can set the record straight for everybody watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and everybody listening later on podcast services around the globe. Housekeeping for you. Extra Life is this Saturday. Extra Life 2018 is November 3rd. We'll be streaming games and shenanigans for more than 24 hours as we raise money for the Children's Miracle Network. You can join or donate right now at kindoffunny.com/extralife. And then today we're brought to you by Loot Crate and Robin Hood, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news.
Look, I listened to that for years.
You had to do it. I'm glad you did. Kevin, bring me Tim Geddes. If you didn't know, six items on the Roper Report.
A baker's dozen.
Number one, there is a Smash Brothers Ultimate Direct this Thursday. Officially from Nintendo, it reads, tune in Thursday, November 1st at 7 a.m. Pacific time for a Super Smash Brothers Ultimate Direct, which will feature approximately 40 minutes of new information on the game. Additionally, once the Direct concludes, stay tuned for a Nintendo Treehouse Live featuring live gameplay of Super Smash Brothers Ultimate, Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu, and Pokemon Let's Go Eevee,
the
Yoshi's Crafted
game.
World, and Diablo 3 Eternal Edition. On the shock mic is none other than Tim Geddes, the verified one.
It's true.
Tim?
Mr. Bush.
Yes.
Can I ask you a question? Are you team Pikachu or team Eevee?
Eevee.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Man of the people. Much respect.
You came on yesterday and set the world ablaze with your I want to believe version 2. Here's the Grinch theory of what's happening in Super Smash Brothers Ultimate. Where are you one day removed now that Nintendo heard you and basically said everything's correct? Let's run
it
direct.
Let's fucking run it. The hype has fully consumed me at this point. I was telling you yesterday that I was losing sleep. Last night I did not sleep. There was rumors of this direct brewing on the Reddits,
on the
Game Facts, on the Reset Eras, everywhere, the internet,
of course,
right? You might be familiar.
I've heard of the internet,
and I believed in that, and all the rumors were pointing at. By the time I wake up, there will be a direct announced, and by golly, there was.
Yeah,
am I excited that it's at 7 a.m.
Thursday,
the night after our Halloween party?
What a bunch of jerks!
No, I am not excited about that at all.
Yeah.
Did I buy a Grinch costume to wear on the direct? Yeah, I did.
I can't wait for Hungover Tim in a Grinch costume.
It's going to be good. Yeah. It's going to be real damn good.
Yeah.
We'll get here in time. We'll fucking see. I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
What was the question?
What does this do to, do you believe that? Does this change anything in your belief systems?
Here's my thing. To be clear, I never believed in the Grinch theory.
Okay.
I want to
You just
believe.
Want to present
you
it.
You believe in the Grinch?
I don't believe in the Grinch.
Okay.
I've been called the Grinch by many people due to my lack of enthusiasm for holidays. I put all of my enthusiasm into the Smash hype and wanting to believe that the Grinch theory is real. It would just be such a dream come true. Because I was telling you this on the show yesterday, Greg. With DLC, we don't know we're going to get DLC, but we know we're going to get DLC for Smash Bros., right?
But and this is Ultimate. It says Ultimate in the title, guys. It's just like Mario Kart 8 Deluxe.
But my thing is, if we got if we got these seven characters in Ultimate, then the DLC would be like crazy off the wall people because we'd get them all out of the way, right? If the Grinch theory is not true, we can look at this and be like, these guys are pretty likely for DLC.
I'd like to turn it over to Osama. Osama writes into kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, hello, KFGD crew. A Smash Brothers Direct was just announced for this Thursday, and it's going to be 40 minutes long. Let me just get my immediate reactions out of the way. Excuse me out of the question. The last Smash Ultimate Direct was 25 minutes long and contained way more information than anyone was expecting, with 5 new character announcements, the reveal of all the stages, and all the music. Obviously, they will have more characters to show, as well as the entry Spirits Mode? Is that what
Spirit Mode.
But that would probably still leave so much time left in the Direct. I think that they'll have even more to show afterwards. Keeping all this in mind, is this the game with the most amount of content for your book in a long time? So many characters, over 100 stages, 28 hours of music, and so much more. I cannot think of a game that has had this much content in it since maybe The Witcher 3, especially because the content isn't cut up into season passes or DLC. It's all $60. Thoughts?
There's a lot of content. I think that is a safe assumption that this game is going to be absolutely huge. The Spirits Mode is going to be a big thing, though, of whether or not...
What is that? I don't even know what
Spirits
that is.
Spirits Mode is the rumor. Like, they announced that there's a mode, and they were really vague about what it is, and like something was blurred out. The internet sleuths found out that it says Spirits Mode. We assume it's the single-player, like, story mode.
I figured that's going to be probably the main heft of this Direct, especially for being 40 minutes long.
So the last... When we saw Simon Belmont get revealed, they spent 6 minutes and 27 seconds talking about his character reveal. If you break down the 40 minutes into the 7 characters, it's possible, guys. I'm just saying. Jokes aside, though, I think that this Direct's going to talk about everything. I think this is going to be... We're going to see the final roster for the launch of the game. We're going to see the modes. The one thing I'm not confident they're going to really talk about is online. They're not confident in their online.
Gotcha.
But we'll see.
Okay.
Are you okay with there being so little mystery going into it? Like, are you happy that we'll see pretty much everything?
I mean, I'm totally fine with that. Yeah. Like, because gone is the era of being like new challenger approaching, and it's Marth, and you're like, who the fuck is that? You know, it's like with the internet and stuff. It's like you're gonna get spoiled. You're not gonna have that moment. So this whole journey has just been so... I'm just happy that I got to do it with you guys. You know what I mean?
I'm happy you guys to do it with us as well, Tim. For this final question, I need a Kingdom Hearts super fan, so you're dismissed. Adam Bankhurst writes into kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, hello, Greg and Jonathan. One very serious question here. In regards to the upcoming Smash Direct, besides Sora, what Kingdom Hearts character would you love to have in Smash Brothers Ultimate? I'll even allow some Disney choices. Smiley, and then beyond.
Ooh, Adam is one of our intrepid IGN freelancers. So, hey, Adam. Obviously, Greg, as you would know, it should clearly be Aqua would be the main choice.
You're telling me, man. I've been saying for a long time, Aqua and Barbie Girl. They both need to be in this thing. They need to be ready to go.
Personally, for me, it probably would be of some of the newer class of characters. Aqua, she's going to play a huge part in Kingdom Hearts 3, and so I think it would kind of make sense if she was included. Or Riku, who's been, since the beginning of the series, such a key character. I think if you're not including Sora, which obviously you should include Sora on the Disney side, I want Mickey, just because of the idea of Mickey beating the hell out of Mario with a giant key is amazing.
That's what you want.
Maybe I've had that dream a little too many times, sure, but it's sure okay. You have, I of the Disney characters, like obviously Mickey is an easy one, but I think the idea of him beating up a bunch of Nintendo characters is kind of amazing.
No chance of this happening, though.
No, definitely
just
not.
Sure. Yeah. Just making sure. Number two, I don't know if you know this, Red Dead Redemption sold really well as number two.
Haven't heard of it.
Red Dead Redemption 2 is pretty popular on the internet, right? And it turns out that it's done really well. This is from Rockstar Games. Rockstar Games is proud to announce that the critically acclaimed Red Dead Redemption 2 has achieved the single biggest opening weekend in the history of entertainment. Then there's an asterisk, but we'll get to that later. With over $725 million in worldwide retail sell-through during its first 3 days, Red Dead Redemption 2 is the second highest grossing entertainment launch of all time, next to Rockstar Games' previously released title, Grand Theft Auto V, which achieved over $1 billion in retail sell-through in 3 days. Asterisk. Sony Interactive Entertainment also confirmed that Red Dead Redemption 2 set new records on the PlayStation Network for highest ever pre-orders, highest day one sales, and highest sales for the first 3 days in market. Rockstar Games has partnered with Sony, this PlayStation, to bring the PlayStation 4 players first access to earn select select online content in Red Dead Online that is planned to release this November. Red Dead Redemption 2's list of initial benchmarks include biggest opening weekend in retail sell-through across entertainment releases, second biggest launch 3 days in retail sell-through across all entertainment releases, biggest entertainment launch of 2018, most pre-order game ever on the PlayStation Network, biggest day one full game sales ever on PlayStation Network, biggest first 3 days full game sales ever on the PlayStation Network. Are you shocked?
No, not at all. I mean, especially with it, we'll talk about probably those asterisks in a second. Yeah, they obviously I was not shocked that it would sell very well. It's, again, also not surprising, though, that GTA 5 outsold it.
Of course.
GTA 5
that billion dollars in a day, right? That was such a big deal.
That was also the thing about GTA, and I think that's why some of these asterisks are there, is that GTA 5 came out on a Tuesday, and Red Dead obviously had a Friday, so it had that Friday, Saturday, Sunday to kind of get people when they were off from work. There's also the weird thing of, like, biggest entertainment release ever, though, is a weird caveat, because this is a game that costs $60. People go to a movie on opening weekend. It average ticket price is
10 to 12. Somewhere in there, yeah.
So there's all these numbers at work here. Obviously, it is a successful game. I'm not trying
obviously,
to, like,
yeah, no one's taking away
that,
from
but
it.
Yeah,
at all.
There are a lot of caveats when we see some things like the biggest entertainment release of all time.
I didn't bring over the asterisks for some reason. No. I'm jumping into my email here to discover them for you. Red Dead Redemption 2 Dead Redemption 2 launched on a Friday, so that its opening weekend, in quotes, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, is the same as its first 3 days. While Grand Theft Auto 5 launched on a Tuesday.
Yeah,
so there's the asterisks right there. Yeah, I think it's interesting, of course. There was question leading into this of how successful it could be, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's, I mean, you know, 725, right, is not that far off of $1 billion, which was such a benchmark for GTA 5. Yeah. So for it to hit that alone, pretty awesome, let alone
absolutely.
Then you have the reviews, you still can't open Twitter without everybody putting up horse gifs or videos or funny things they've run into.
Yeah, and I mean, who knows? I'm curious to see how they wrap it into things when it releases, but who knows how Red Dead Online will further accentuate this success.
And that's a great point what is Red Dead Online actually going to be when it finally gets here?
Yeah, and I think we'll see a lot of more good stories about how well Red Dead is doing through the rest of the
I don't think
season.
That's going to stop. Yeah, no, I think exactly. That's going to we're heading up next with financials for things that have happening. Obviously, second quarter closing out, that stuff's being released. Would you want some Red Dead questions here, Jonathan Dornbush?
Yeah,
or do you want to go into the financials, keep it all together?
What would you prefer?
I'm asking you. You're the host of Podcast Beyond. I'll learn from you.
I'll take a question.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Mike writes in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, "Hi, gang. I'm going to try to keep this quick, but in regards to the common complaint about Red Dead Redemption 2, since it came out, it's not actually fun to play. Are video games supposed to be fun? That might sound stupid, but if we want to say that video games are art, then don't we need to admit that not all good art is fun? Schindler's List and 12 Years a Slave are fantastic, award-winning movies, but would anyone call them fun to watch? Art, in my opinion, is supposed to evoke an emotional reaction above all else. So why treat video games differently? Do games have value if they are not traditionally fun? Thanks." Where are we right now with what you're hearing at IGN? Obviously, here it's been an interesting ride, and I will, you know, beat a dead horse in Red Dead Redemption 2 of, you know, Andy started it, didn't like it that much, then he came around after playing it a lot. Yes, Kevin started it and really loved it, and then came in yesterday after weekend and being like, it kind of is like picking at a scab, where I'm not thrilled, but I'm doing it.
I'm still going through.
Exactly.
I'm a little bit like Kevin right now. I have enjoyed a lot of it, but I've also had a lot of problems with it. And I think, at least reading the room right now at IGN, there are a lot of people who love it, and there are some people who have misgivings. But I think we can also, even with those misgivings, appreciate some of the technical prowess.
Oh, sure. Totally.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. I do think, like, the question of fun, I really remember I had a couple college courses about that. And the idea, like, there was at NYU, they have, like, a games major and everything there. Yeah. And there were a lot of courses about just the idea of fun in games.
Yeah.
And specifically the word, like, games are synonymous sort of with play. And play is very much about fun to a certain extent. So I think that's why when we think, like, well, Red Dead isn't fun for some people, does that make it a bad game necessarily? And that
100%.
Comes up a lot. And for me, like, those first couple hours of that game were boring. And we're at a point, for me at least, in entertainment where when you say the first couple hours are boring, there's so much else I can turn to.
Exactly.
And I think it was so many people at the office saying, but once it opens up, there is so much there to engage with. And I really wanted to see that. And I've loved some of it. I've had issues with some other parts of it. But I don't necessarily think a game has to be fun inherently if its intent is a larger scope experience.
Yeah.
I remember there was a lot of the discussion with The Last of Us when that came out. A lot of people were like, I'm not having fun with The Last of Us, but it's great. There was a lot of that talk too.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the whole fun?
I agree with what turn the page. This is why Andrea always beats me when she has the computer. Mike is talking about in the fact that, yeah, games, I've been saying for a long time, and like this old adage from you, the silly putty thing, right? You're grabbing the putty and you're pulling it out. So games are there for any mood you're in. In the same way, like that Dragon Cancer, not a fun game.
No.
I'm not playing that for an uplifting story. I know what I'm getting involved in, going in for an experience. In the same way, yeah, you'd watch a Schindler's List or you'd watch a drama or something to that effect for a different reason than why you'd go watch Ghostbusters. I thought one of the best things Jared and I stumbled on when we were talking on Red Dead Radio and then into the Games Cast was this conversation of Red Dead's a deliberate game. It has a deliberate vision. It has a deliberate story. It's doing something. Everything it does, it's doing deliberately to make its game. And I, even though that sadly the game didn't click for me and I'm just like, no big deal, I'm glad they did that. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that there are games out there that I don't like.
Yeah.
That don't click for me, that aren't something I want to spend time in. Now, you know, Red Dead can easily go on the shelf and then who knows where I'm going to be in a month and a half and maybe I want that kind of experience.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do agree that games don't have to be fun. That's not what they need to be.
And I love the idea of like not every game has to click for you. Like the idea, if every game was made to satisfy every human being in the world, you games would be terrible.
There'd be no narratives. I didn't, you know, click with the story of God of War the first four times or whatever. I guess, six if you include
the PSP
games, but not the mobile game. And then, so I'm glad we finally got to where it worked for me. But that's not to take away and say God of War 1 through everything weren't great before
Absolutely,
that.
Absolutely. Yeah. They had different intentions.
Yeah. And that's the thing, right? I want games as art to have intention. That's the thing. It's when you get a middling game that doesn't succeed at having a vision or trying to get where it is that you get a game that does fall so low on the IGN scale.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, this is a very subjective piece of art that you get to play and walk away from with your own opinions and thoughts.
Yeah, and it's the interesting thing of like a game, when games don't have a point or a purpose, like don't get me wrong, obviously the industry is made to make money. And I think people do forget that sometimes of like,
of course,
they're there at the end of the day to make money, but there are people here with artistic intent and that intention. And I think it's fascinating because this came up a lot in like film classes. I also took, or just talking to people about film, like the director had a vision, but does that make it, that doesn't inherently make something good.
Good point.
But how close does it get to that intention? And also what do you as the viewer, and especially with a game, what do you as the player who is interacting with and kind of shaping this experience for yourself, what do you take away from that? And I think if a game can let you take away with what you want out of it, that's an amazing experience too. But obviously if it has a certain intent, that doesn't make it bad.
100%. Anyway,
but yeah, it's a fascinating thing. I'm excited to, I'm probably about like 15 hours in to the game, and I'm excited to keep playing if only to see more of what the world has to experience. I really like being in that world. And we were talking a little bit before the show. I am excited for Red Dead Online because of that, more so than necessarily, I haven't attached myself to Arthur Morgan and his story yet. I don't really feel anything for him necessarily as a character. So I'm excited to see maybe this world will reflect even more positively for me when it's my own cowboy.
Exactly. Yeah. To take the world and the systems of Red Dead, but apply it to your own story that you're building and the narrative you're creating for yourself, that will be super fascinating and interesting when you get there. I'm very excited about that as well.
Yeah, me too. Because on a game level right now, the systems that are there, I don't love a lot of them.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of issues with them on just like a minute-to-minute sort of thing. So I'm curious to see how those translate to when it's my own person.
In this line of thinking, Tin Man writes in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, with Red Dead Redemption 2 being so split, with people either loving the realism or hating it, is it safe to say that God of War is the game of the year right now?
I don't think it's safe to say anything. It's game of the year. Just in general, but also with game of the year. I do think there are definitely some people who are split on this game, but there are also people who emphatically love this. Obviously, you see that with the review scores and everything, but also just talking to people anecdotally at the IGN office. Like, there are people who unabashedly love this game, and there are also people who unabashedly love God of War. And I think it depends what the type of experience you're going for. And I also think a lot of it depends on what Game of the Year means to you.
Uh-huh.
I think if the intent of Game of the Year is every aspect of a game works together in concert to create an amazing experience. That's one type of game of the year. One is to offer me the most content I can dive into and allow me to fully get absorbed in the world. That's a different sort of game of the year. Like, it really depends on what you define game of the year should be as.
Yeah.
And I think that will drive a lot, at least at IGN, of what the conversation ends up being. But yeah. I don't think it's safe.
No, you nailed that. I don't think it's ever safe to say what game of the year is, with maybe the exception of Zelda. Where yes. Like, there's no way stopping that train for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
But even then, I think there were, Tin Man talks about it being so split, right?
Yeah.
I really don't think it is. I think it's just that the game is so beloved in getting these 10s that for some reason, as you see that, the counterbalance of the people who are like, I didn't like it because X, Y, and Z, that seems like it's ringing louder than I think it is to the majority of people.
Yes.
Yeah. And so it'll be, I still think that it's Red Dead's game to lose for game of the year. I won't be... I think Red Dead's going to win Game of the Year. And I mean, like, Game Awards overall, sure. IGN Game of the Year. Kind of funny. I bet Still's going to be
I'm very curious about IGN's Game of the Year award. Like, we haven't really started discussing it or anything, but I know that, like, the year GTA 5 came out, it didn't win.
Yeah.
Like, Rockstar Games haven't historically won Game of the Year as often when they come out, and so I'm curious to see how we all feel about it when we talk about it a couple weeks
and that'll be the fascinating thing about it. Yeah. And but it comes down to what you're talking about, right, of what do you want out of Game of the Year?
Yeah.
And that was always my argument at IGN, where I loved Game X, but I was talking about the year Walking Dead was up for it, and it was Walking Dead versus Journey, I think, and it was very much where I liked Walking Dead more than I liked Journey, but for me, saying Game of the Year says it's the best experience, it runs the best, it does it's the best story and all that jazz, but or whatever, it's the best gameplay.
Yeah.
But as badly and poorly as Walking Dead ran, I was like, there's no way you can hang Game of the Year on that, even though I love that game more than I think I love Journey.
Yeah. And for me, I always think it's fascinating, especially when you do compare smaller scale games against the bigger games and how that influences the conversation. But yeah, like that year for me, Journey affected me on an experience like so profoundly emotionally that I like, it's one of my favorite games of all time. And I think, yes, my other few favorite games of all time could have come out that year, but it'd be hard to beat what Journey did in 2 hours that most games try to do in 100.
What I think is going to be possibly the most fascinating comparison, right?
Yeah.
Is going to be stuff like, okay, what is IGN Game Awards, all like the critic stuff.
Yeah.
Well, how does that differ in terms of Game of the Year versus DICE and GDC?
Yeah.
Cause I really do feel that, I think it's not a toss-up, but I do think that there's enough, I didn't like Red Dead because of this, or I didn't like that, so that something else can win in the critic space.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I think from, I'm a developer playing this game, and I see the way, I'm seeing it like the Matrix, and I see the code, and I see the way it's working. I think, like, even if it didn't click for you as a developer, people are going to sit back and be like, they made a piece of art here that's incredible that nobody else does, and I wouldn't be surprised if like the inside developer awards start giving it out to that one.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much going under the hood that we can only begin to think about.
Right, and we're just like, Arthur.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, motherfucker, that bird just picked up a snake organically.
It is that thing of thinking about, especially God of War versus Red Dead, where at least so far in Red Dead for me, I think about the minute to minute of throwing the axe in God of War and of like the second that would run by and so much would happen immediately and it felt so good all the time. Whereas with Red Dead, minutes will go by and I'm not really doing anything, but that's the intent of that game.
Exactly.
But is that the experience that I want? And that's really what I think what it comes
down to. And that's the biggest differential. And why, for me, God of War is still my game of the year is the fact that, and I'm comparing it then to Assassins and Spider-Man, other games I've loved this year.
Yeah.
It's the fact that I was engaged and enraptured the entire time. And there was never a wasted moment in God of War. Like even in being in the boat when they start like, oh, I'm hearing a story that I don't want to get out of the boat to stop hearing.
Absolutely.
And going back and doing the trials and platinuming that game, I was like, this game's just incredible.
It's every inch of that world is specific and intentioned in such a way that I can't think of. Even a lot of Red Dead is obviously intentioned, like
of course,
you were saying.
Of course.
But it is also an open world thing where things are supposed to happen organically and emerge from that experience. So it just depends, really, I think, on what experience you want. Yeah.
We shall see. The year's ending soon, if you haven't looked at the calendar.
Oh, wow.
Halloween tomorrow. Number three is a financial smattering of stories. We're going to start with Ubisoft. They put out, Q2 results have been released here in terms of what happened for the financial fiscal years or whatever. Ubisoft put out this piece of data that I thought was interesting. They put out a whole bunch of data, but what was interesting in making this around a reset era that I then went and read the report, right? Year over year, player recurring investment is up 50%. And that's this is for their H1 I don't even know what that stands for. H1. What's H1? Yeah, well, fiscal year 19, right? Talking about the fact that it's up 519 million right now. I believe it's euros. And that's overall 52% year over year, but led by this digital distribution of that makes up 52%, and then 50% of that to make it get to the other thing.
Who knows?
I'm just saying that, hey, guess what, everybody who is like, oh man, DLC sucks and add-on content sucks and microtransaction sucks, people are still buying them. Oh, yeah. And it's a huge move right there. Especially compared to the year before, right? 50%. It's up 50%.
Well, we're seeing Ubisoft too double down so much on things like Siege,
right?
And it, keeping those games for a long tail.
Yeah. So digital distribution is up 52% year over year, and then the reoccurring expenses, which include I shrunk this thing trying to make it better, which was stupid. In-game items, DLC, season pass, and subscription and advertising. Again, I've always been of the argument that microtransactions and stuff don't have to be bad and can be done well. And I thought Assassin's Creed did do it well. And I know that's not a necessarily universally praised point.
Sure.
But, last night I jumped back into Assassin's Creed and I did jump back into the store to see if they had new stuff that I didn't want to buy. But I was like, man, as soon as they're like, hey, here's a cool costume or here's a new armor set that's really nice, I'll buy it. I'll give them the money because I'm going to keep playing that. And I think I own the season pass already and I want to run through the DLC for that game.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's that thing of, there was that whole discussion of Assassin's Creed trying to force you essentially to, I haven't finished the story, but at least in the 58 or so hours of that game that I've played, I've never felt like I was at a huge disadvantage or the game was forcing me to try to buy something.
Yeah.
The Ubisoft model has very much geared itself toward, you buy this game, you're invested in this game for the next year. It's not, you buy this game and you play it for a week and then you go back. And we're seeing that you see that with their multiplayer games like Siege, but we're also seeing it with Assassin's Creed and how they're trying to do these
live
events.
Which is crazy.
And,
They keep failing. They try to put out another Mercenary, I guess, yesterday that failed as well. So they talked about that. That's two
Ancient
weeks in a
Greece
row
tough.
Where they couldn't get the updates. The ships are working. But again, for me, jumping back into that game, like, a new mercenary wouldn't bring me into the game,
absolutely.
But if I'm doing other stuff and there's a new mercenary, sure, I'll take that.
I'll go along with it. Yeah, and I think it's just a smart idea of I can jump back into this game a year from now and know there will probably be a bunch of new things for me to try.
Exactly.
So,
I'm. And that's, you're turning your investment, right? Or keeping you there and keeping you engaged and keeping you playing and buying.
Yeah.
Like, I know that's a four-letter word. Everybody wants the $60 box to have everything in it and have it ready to go. But, I mean, you look at Ubisoft, who... just a few years ago, we're on the ropes, right? With Vivendi looking like this was inevitable.
Yeah.
And they changed their business model and changed into this company that, For Honor, huge success. Rainbow Six Siege, huge success. Division, huge success. And they found a way to keep those worlds going while keeping single player going. Like, it was, I don't understand that, deservedly so, PlayStation gets so much credit for, single player is still thriving and awesome. But to the same credit, Ubisoft could go make those multiplayer games only, but they are still also making Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
And something like Starlink for audience too.
The fact that Starlink as well, not only is it doing well, people are like, oh man, this is a good game. It's not even that, it's not, it's the bar wasn't so low. It's like, oh, this is like a No Man's Sky with toys or whatever.
Yeah. It's fascinating to see it, and we're seeing a lot of other companies, I think, catch up to that idea. Of you don't need to just have someone buy this game and then move on. And it's just the reality of the world we live in. And yes, if they're making bad DLC choices and things like that, we absolutely should chastise them.
100%.
But at the same time, when they're not hampering that core experience that you are paying for up front, I don't have a problem with them trying to accentuate that with other choices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't wait to get back and play more.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
Then GamesIndustry.biz reports Nintendo sold 3.19 million units of the Switch in the second quarter, pushing the console to 22.86 million. Million units across the lifetime. IGN has three Switch games have now sold more than 10 million units to date as well. The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild stands at nearly 10.3 million sales, while Mario Kart 8 Deluxe and Super Mario Odyssey have more than 11 million and 12 million sales respectively. In total, about 42 million copies of Switch software have been sold, meaning the average Switch owner has approximately two games. Not too shabby.
No.
Nintendo, right?
And I would assume most of the one of two games for each person is Zelda, given that it had a more than 100% attach rate when the system launched.
Right, of course. People buying all the different copies or whatever.
Well.
Yeah, and then over on Sony's side, GamesIndustry.biz says Sony's Q2 games profit soared 65% over the prior year, boosted by the strong performance of its first-party titles and Insomniac Spider-Man in particular. In the 3 months ended in September 30th, 2018, Sony Interactive Entertainment earned $4.88 billion in revenue, up 27% over prior year. Operating profit for the quarter was $803 million, up 65% year-on-year. IGN reports, Sony has revealed that the PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 4 Pro have combined sold 86.1 million units as of the end of the company's last fiscal quarter. Fiscal quarter. Gosh.
It's not bad. I wrote that.
Remember
last
when
one.
We all thought it was going to end? One more, damn, man. PS3, Xbox 360 area have been fun, but we're going to get one more console generation, and then everything is going to fall apart.
Yeah, it's and Sony even raised its forecast for the year for consoles sold because of the boon that they had in this last quarter.
Yeah,
I don't see any signs of slowing down. I think those. Before they happened, I thought the mid-generation sort of console upgrades were dumb.
Yeah.
I didn't really see a purpose in them. And then I played God of War and wanted a PS4 Pro so badly.
Yeah.
and so I kind of get it, and I do like how it injected life into this because it feels really like the generations are finally getting their grasp on everything, and we're seeing some of the best work of the generation this year and last year. And I don't necessarily want to see the generation just disappear like that in a snap.
Do you think you're going to? This is the ongoing conversation I have with people.
When the next generation comes.
Yeah, but is it going to be that, or is it just going to be the next Xbox and the next PlayStation play the PlayStation 4 games? PlayStation 4 can play the next Xbox, or the next generation, in quotes, games.
Yeah, I mean,
it just won't look as good.
With this huge install base, it seems so silly to be like, hey, you remember all those games that you bought for the PS4? Immediately, they're all gone. Because at least with the last generation update, I think there was a lot of talk at the beginning of that generation, at least someone from sort of the outside looking into the industry of like, the PS2 to PS3 jump is huge. The PS3 to PS4 jump initially didn't seem that big.
No,
And so to give people a reason to buy these new consoles, I think is more and more important, especially when we're not seeing these consoles slow down really all that much in sales.
Yeah.
So I think you have to give people a reason to buy into this thing from the start.
Yeah.
And being able to say you're not going to lose all the stuff that you're still invested in, especially when all these games are doing this live games as a service thing. Like if I'm playing Rainbow Six Siege and I've been playing for the last year and a half, or I'm playing For Honor for a year and a half, and I have to buy this new console, I want to guarantee that all of my stuff is going to carry over. I want to make sure I can still keep playing that game, especially because it doesn't seem to be dying down for so many of them.
Yeah, no way.
So this is such a fascinating jump to me because I don't think it is going to be a pure like technological audiovisual jump.
No
I
way,
don't
yeah.
think that's going to be what matters in this jump. And I'm curious to see what the console makers think will matter.
Yeah. I mean, streaming seems to be the biggest question, right? And what that's going to look like. And obviously Xbox and Microsoft being all on board on it. I'm the most fascinated with PlayStation.
Yeah.
I really do think when I sit there and I was ranting to Nick because he was behind on everything in Toronto at breakfast about this, where I really think the next Xbox is going to be what they've all described with like Xbox Scarlet, Xbox whatever.
Yeah.
Hey, you can either get the streaming version or you can get the beefy version that can also stream if you want to, but it does all these things. It's going to play all the Xbox One games. Your Xbox One is going to be able to play the games that are running on this. We're just dealing now with a PC slider issue of like what quality you're getting and what's getting locked out or what's not happening.
Yeah.
And then when you get to that point and you have all these services and Xbox is running off this foundation they've built of Game Pass, of what they've built with backwards compatibility, what they've built now with these studios they are building, that makes sense to me. Of,
yeah.
Hey, we're going to do something crazy. We're going to try to get you in the door with streaming. You can stream everywhere. I would not, like, as I've said before, put it past them that their streaming service is going to be on a Switch, that they'll have that application out there, similar to Odyssey, obviously, streaming over in Japan.
Yeah.
But PlayStation is the wild card.
They're in a really weird space right now because like all the stuff you were mentioning with Xbox, all of it is pretty cohesive. Like you buy into one of those aspects and you're essentially buying into everything.
Yeah.
And like we're seeing, I find all these late generation changes that PlayStation is making right now fascinating when you see like crossplay and the name changes and also with like the PS Now updates.
Yeah.
Like obviously they are shoring up PS Now to be a bigger thing, but it's disconnected from your PS Plus subscription. And I, as someone who like has tried to keep up with games as much as I can, I don't really see a need for PS Now, but if it was included in my PS Plus, I would sure as hell probably dip into those games.
Yeah, of course.
Even though right now I have no inclination to. So it's that weird thing of all of their options are so disparate right now, and I think they need to decide, are they going to try to bundle all of that stuff together? What are they going to double down on?
Well, it's the whole thing of, it just feels like, even though they're out in front on a services level, it still feels like PlayStation's playing catch up.
Yes.
And it's because they are, right? Of Xbox is knocked out of the park and been doing this stuff for so long that it keeps feeling like we, the consumer, or Epic sometimes, are forcing their hand.
Yeah.
Of like, fucking let us change our names. Let crossplay happen. Let PS Now download the games. You can see how Xbox is doing it. Why can't we do it that way?
Yeah.
And so they finally get to that point. But even still, if they're playing catch up on that front, what does their next generation look like? Is it just a traditional next generation that would be backwards compatible, but I don't think would be the whole, you can play PlayStation, or your PlayStation 4 can play PlayStation 5 games. I'm using, throwing that around.
Yeah, I think I can see them going pretty traditional, and I think that will be okay for the first year or two, but I think in the long run that will hurt them.
Dude, I've said it before, yeah. and I think only in private, right? But if that's how it goes and they do the traditional way, and meanwhile Xbox comes out and they're like, we figured out this Azure stuff, you know, the 56 stations, and obviously San Francisco's going to be one of them, and yada, yada, yada,
yeah.
And that streaming shit worked, I would seriously consider being like, man, I got to play everything that I can on Xbox because I think it's cool, period, right now, that I log into my Windows PC with the same thing I log into on my Xbox, and it's all sync. And I mean, we're going down as a PlayStation, you know, fanboy in quotes, me. The fact of just like, you look at the little bits of customer service Xbox does in terms of like, yeah, your saves sync automatically. I don't have to do that immediately. That sirens are on our end. They sync automatically. You don't have to go in and tell it to do it. You want to know how close you are to getting the 56 heads you need for this trophy? Still our sirens. You jump into your Xbox achievements and see. Yeah, like, that is all such awesome stuff that PlayStation doesn't do.
Yeah.
And so when you really add it in of just like what they're talking about doing, and I know we've talked about it enough where people come in, well, you know, remote play. Like, there's a remote play app for your PlayStation, right? But it's still, yeah, that's still relying on the internet of where I am to get to the internet of my house to wake up my console to then communicate back when Xbox is talking about my internet communicating right to this Xbox One on an Azure server doing something amazing that I can barely think about.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's so fascinating because obviously the medium is relatively young still, but for the number of console generations that we've had, especially once Xbox been in it, it flip-flops every generation. Yeah. Like, the market leader has always been flip-flopping, and I would not be surprised if PlayStation and Xbox flip again, especially because it seems like the things Xbox is doing right now are future-proofing.
Yeah.
And like you said, PlayStation is playing a lot of catch-up with that stuff. And just on like a level of interacting with the customer, Xbox has Phil Spencer come out for all these things.
100%.
And PlayStation, we talked a little bit beyond about it. They have these, PlayStation has these amazing press conferences, but they are largely humanless now.
Yeah, there's not really moved back to what they were, right? And I think that's what happens is that when you're second place in a generation, you get hungry.
Yeah.
And you are willing to take those chances and the shots the other people won't. And you are thinking of like, especially Xbox. I mean, look at everything they've done in terms of backwards compatibility, Game Pass, looking into streaming. They're looking at it from a real perspective, and I'm not even shitting on them, obviously, of, all right, cool, we don't have exclusives like PlayStation does.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to buy these studios. They're going to make them great. That's 5 years out before we start seeing some fruit from that tree. We have to make our system excel in some way, right? And so you get Game Pass, which is an amazing value.
It's
and incredible, right?
And I still think Xbox is messing up in a lot of ways. Like, Nintendo has nailed the Direct and the format of that thing.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to me that both Microsoft and PlayStation can't do something like that. Like, obviously, Sean Layden has been appearing more on the PlayStation blogcast a lot to try to talk directly to people, but that's just one audio podcast. And whereas the Xbox...
Inside
Xboxes, I think those should be 40 minutes shorter and way snappier and way better produced as a holistic thing. But it's still them trying to make that effort in a different way. And yeah, it's just... They understand their place in it right now, and they know that they're not going to surpass PlayStation this generation when it comes to sales and everything and first party output. So they're focusing on the long term, and I think that's really smart. And I think PlayStation has slowly been realizing, oh, we need to focus on that long term too, because they have been putting out tremendous stuff this generation.
But yeah,
I think
of course.
Now it is, okay, what does the next gen look like?
Yeah. And we're at such a cool tipping point of seeing what all this looks like. And maybe streaming totally blows up in everybody's faces. Maybe, 5G isn't as close as we want it to be. Even when it gets here, it doesn't run that well. Everything goes to hell. You know what I mean?
But it'll be a fun few years.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
Speaking of all the streaming and cloud stuff, EA has a confusing thing. Number four, let's go to gamesindustry.biz, where Hayden Taylor is going to talk to us about cloud technology in EA. Electronic Arts has this week announced it's entering the cloud technology arena with Project Atlas. The cloud native development program, or platform, my apologies, was detailed by CTO Ken Moss in a post on Medium. Over 1,000 people at EA are working on the project every day, according to Moss, along with dozens of studios driving priorities and contributing their innovation. With Atlas, EA is hoping to overcome the main roadblocks to evolving game development, such as the spiraling costs that come with technological advances. This has caused some development to plateau, suggests Moss. Without significant automation, it becomes almost untenable to scale beyond current game sizes because the demand on creator hours and cost does not scale, he said. However, Project Atlas promises to seamlessly converge artificial intelligence and cloud computing with the Frostbite game engine and online services such as hosting and matchmaking into a single unified solution. Quote, the two formerly distinct worlds of engine and services are merging, and what is emerging is the need for a next-generation unified platform, said Moss. Power, scalability, creativity, and security are the four primary areas in which EA intends to empower developers and players with the tech.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it is, and I feel like, and it's on gamesindustry.biz, right? So it's facing a very, like, hey, we're development side, right?
Yeah.
And so it is a development tool. So it's at the end, including players. It's like, okay, I guess, yeah, matchmaking. But in reality, it sounds like something that's going to help developers if they get on and use it, if they want to use Frostbite.
Yeah, I mean, like, games keep getting, on the AAA scale, bigger and bigger, and that becomes seemingly more untenable to maintain production on those things in an easy way. And so I understand how, like, the streaming aspect can offload some of that issue, especially with so many games going into an ongoing service realm. But... yeah, it's not totally clear how this will play out in the long run.
Good for you, EA.
Yeah,
get in the cloud, Project Atlas. Whatever can make development easier. But we'll see exactly what that means. I assume it's them. I mean, so many people at EA, right, use the Frostbite engine. So if you're all using it in the cloud, then I guess it's moving faster. So when the FIFA team figures out and makes something better, they can fix that and put it in there. Kind of like Decima engine, right?
Yeah.
Where Kojima was able to pick that one and then learn from everything with Guerrilla and talk to Guerrilla personally when something went wrong.
Totally, yeah. And I assume, especially with them having games coming up like Anthem and Battlefield's Battle Royale and having a lot more online focus there, it probably just makes more sense to offload some of that rather than having so much put on downloading to the player or having on their specific sort of service. Yeah, it's interesting, but we'll see how
it's super
out.
Inside baseball. Something to keep in your cap, I guess, to see what's going on. Number five, hey, Undertale fans, Toby Fox has something to tease. Over on Twitter, he tweeted, for those who completed Undertale, it's really important that you check at Undertale 24 hours from now, which would be 6 a.m. Pacific time on Halloween. I want to make something new, and it all begins with your feedback. A Windows PC / Mac OS X PC is needed. What the hell's happening over there?
Undertale Battle Royale.
Oh, God. All your actions you've ever done in any Battle Royale match have played out to this one part.
Everything will matter.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated. I got to Undertale pretty late. I played it for the first time when it came to PS4.
Okay.
And so I had heard so much about the hype of the game and really the experience of you need to play through it multiple times to kind of get what's going on under the hood here. And I think, like, obviously there are so many ingenious ideas in how Undertale relates to the player that this must be something along those lines, especially if asking for help and feedback. So I'm curious if this will be something that is a little ongoing, if it's maybe something episodic, but still has those Undertale sensibilities.
Yeah, just 24 hours to find out on Halloween what exactly it is. But if you're an Undertale fan, heads up, something's happening. And then finally, number six on the Roper Report, the final story of the day is PlayStation VR related, mainly to the license. It's one of those, it's businessy. It was just a business press release.
But it's interesting.
But we like PlayStation VR so much, I thought I'd talk about it. Sony Interactive Entertainment and Lenovo. Announced today, they have signed a 2-year patent license agreement. The agreement provides Lenovo with a license to use SIE's patented PlayStation VR, PSVR, industrial design for the Lenovo Mirage Solo virtual reality headset. Quote, we are pleased to announce that we have licensed the PSVR headset design to Lenovo, said Riley Russell, chief legal officer at SIE. The industrial design for the PlayStation VR has been widely acclaimed and that was the result of years of hard work by PlayStation engineers. This agreement with Lenovo is a testament to the quality of PlayStation VR's design, as well as SIE's commitment to creating a great virtual reality experiences and helping the VR industry expand. If you, like me, had no idea what Lenovo was, I Googled it and Best Buy describes it as Lenovo. The Mirage Solo is the world's first standalone VR headset with Daydream. Put away the PCs, the wires, and the smartphones, because Lenovo Mirage Solo is fully self-sufficient, letting you enjoy VR from anywhere at any time. Combine an ultra crisp. Then let's talk about the version it's using right now, right?
Yeah.
Basically, it's VR without any attachments, which is what everybody wants VR to get to.
But with the design of PSVR.
Exactly, which is super interesting.
Yeah, I'm curious what that'll look like. It'll be weird to see a headset that looks exactly like PSVR but isn't PSVR but is more meant, I guess, for people who are using smartphone and mobile VR.
Yeah, well, don't put it all away, they say. They say put it all away. You don't need it. Gone. Yeah, you don't need any of it. You can shove there, throw away your PlayStation.
I really had inclination to just chuck my phone across the room, but
I can't do that.
I'm still paying it off.
I hear you. 100%.
But yeah, I like the PSVR headset design a lot.
Oh, yeah.
It's interesting that that's very specifically what this seems to be about, not necessarily like the tech under the hood, but the design of it.
Right.
And I love the look of it, so if more headsets look like that, that's fine with me.
It makes me wonder. I know people are always wondering, oh, man, when's V2 of PlayStation VR going to come out, right? I wonder if they're licensing what it looks like now because, yeah, they're not that far off from putting out V2, so there won't be customer confusion when you walk in and there are multiple VR units that look very similar.
Totally, and it probably doesn't hurt, I think, also to have input from, obviously, another technologically focused company and who is focusing on VR so much, and especially when PlayStation has to divest their interests.
And that's the thing, too, is, like, you know, VR, and I don't think it's... I think it's superseded what PlayStation expected it to do, but I also don't think it's, like... It ain't making, you know, money on money on money.
No,
so why not license this tech that we're not using to its full potential?
Absolutely.
Or the body, the shell that we're not using to its full potential, and let's see somebody else do something with it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I wonder, if there's any cross collaboration of talking to engineers of what they're doing and how they're going to use it, and if that could ever come down to a PlayStation VR V2, V3 that could be wireless.
And I do like the idea of if they are focusing on a new headset, maybe they want to leave, maybe it's a different enough design that they want to leave this one be. Like
exactly.
Yeah.
So everybody, stay tuned on that one. Because one day it's going to look different. And one day you're going to walk in the store to buy a PlayStation VR. And guess what? You're going to try to buy it, but you're going to buy a Lenovo.
The store is going to be in VR.
Exactly.
It's going to be a problem.
Jonathan.
Yes.
This is where I usually ask you to read a list that I haven't told you that you have to read, but you listen to the show. You know
course.
How it works.
Yeah.
But instead, we're going long. So I'm going to put in right here just the ads. I'm just putting the ads in here and tell you we're sponsored today by two. Loot Crate and Robinhood. Loot Crate, have you heard of Loot Gaming? It's a monthly subscription box delivered right to your door with exclusive pop culture collectibles, apparel, and gear. Loot Gaming curates, designs, everything themselves, and you can't find these items anywhere else. Just like my Fox sunglass that I'm still drinking out of and I'm very happy with. It's cool, Greg. Yeah. Can you get me a close-up on this? Can I hold it up to any of these cameras? Is that possible? I know I'm throwing something. There. Oh, and I'll bring it all the way back. Fox hand. You can't even get it anymore. So there's really no sense in promoting it. It's just that I like that cup.
It's a great cup.
Thank you very much. That's Loot Gaming for you, though. This month's theme is different. This one, victory, comes at the edge of a blade. Face your enemies with razor-sharp gear from God of War, The Elder Scrolls, Kingdom Hearts, and Assassin's Creed. Loot Gaming is a curated collection of exclusive one-of-a-kind items from the best video game franchises around. There's a t-shirt in every crate and $60 of value for less than $29 a month. The crate will sell out, so get over there and get it yourself. Subscribers are also automatically entered to win each month's epic drop, a special prize that looters can win just by being a looter. This month's epic drop includes a PlayStation 4 Pro and God of War bundle. Subscribe now by going to lootcrate.com/games and enter my code GAMES to save an exclusive 30% off your subscription. That's lootcrate.com/games. Enter my code GAMES to save an exclusive 30% off your subscription. Then, Robinhood's up to bat. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. It's a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. You can trade stocks and keeps all your profits, just like Kevin's doing. But Kevin's off buying beer for the Halloween party. So I'll tell you, he's been using the app. He likes it. He's all over the stocks. He's not doing well, particularly himself, but that's because of investments he made, not because of Robinhood. Robinhood as an app is so easy for him to see the money he's losing. With easy to understand charts and market data, you can place a trade in 4 taps on your smartphone. Robinhood is giving listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build their portfolio. Sign up at games.robinhood.com. That's games.robinhood.com. I'll tell you what, Dornbush.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see how much money Kevin makes on Robinhood. But we're going to have to wait so long to find out. If I want more up-to-date information, say what came to the digital mom and pop shops, where would I go?
You could go to the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Out today. Bethesda is doing its first multi-platform beta session for that there, Fallout 76. Of course, Xbox players have been able to play and will still be able to play, but PS4 players and PC players can jump in today. Today's brief window is 4 p.m. Pacific until 8 p.m. Pacific, making it very hard for me to try.
Yeah.
I want to try real bad. That's not a great time
for me.
Not today. And we'll see. Then the Blackout Club, a cooperative paranormal horror mystery game from Question, a team of industry veterans that includes Bioshock 2's creative director and the lead effects artist of Bioshock Infinite, is now available on Windows PC via Steam Early Access. Call of Cthulhu comes to PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. Chronos Arc comes to PlayStation 4, and It Lives, PlayStation Vita. Dream Daddy, Dad Rector's Cut, comes to PlayStation 4. Gal Metal comes to Switch. Gnome's Garden 2 comes to Xbox One. Infinite Adventures comes to PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Kingdom Hearts The Story So Far comes to PlayStation 4. Are you going to be crazy and try to platinum all these? Have you already done that?
So the thing with this collection is it's essentially the 1.5 and 2.5 collection and the 2.8 collection, just in a physical version.
Right.
Like, this isn't a digital thing necessarily.
Okay.
So I'm actually working my way through them and platinuming them right now.
You're crazy.
So yeah, that's the goal.
You can go for crazy people.
Oh, yeah.
Lego Harry Potter collection comes to Xbox One and Switch. Cool, Greg. You've had this code for a while. What's the read on it?
Oh, I fucking love it.
You fucking love it.
At, Extra Life.
You're going to be playing Extra Life?
Yeah.
Okay. That's breaking news, everybody. Extra Life this weekend. Mutant Football League Dynasty Edition comes to Xbox One and Switch. OKKO Let's Play Heroes comes to Switch. Paper Dolls comes to PlayStation VR. Redeemer Enhanced Edition comes to PlayStation 4. Save Me, Mr. Taco comes to Switch and PC. Steven Universe Save the Light comes to Switch. Sports Party comes to Switch. Yo Ma Wari, The Long Night Collection, comes to Switch. Earthfall Invasion gets an update today. Rebellion has released the newest DLC for Strange Brigade. It's called The Sunken Kingdom. And then Pixel Ripped 1989 is getting an update. It's got a nightmare bonus level. And then I'm putting a deal of the day in here as well. First off, the update is available on Oculus and Steam, soon on PlayStation VR. And then discounts are coming. Oculus version is already 25% off, and the Steam version will enjoy the same discount starting November 1st. Then new dates for you. Dragons, Dawn of New Riders comes to... I think it's DreamWorks Dragons, Dawn of New Riders comes to PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Switch, PC, February 2019. Why wouldn't you say How to Train Your Dragon?
It's so silly. Like, if you just saying that title, no one would know.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a beloved franchise.
Yikes. Divinity Original Sin 2 Definitive Edition is coming to Mac devices on Q1 2019. Maybe one of my biggest regrets of the year 2018 is that Divinity Original Sin 2... Played it at Judges Week, and I was like, oh my god, I am so all about this game. Waited for it to come to PlayStation 4. It dropped while I was at some convention, came back, and we were right into the thick of review season. So
it was just right before
Spider-Man. I see it all the time. I'm like, oh, I gotta get to it. But it's also like a million hours.
My girlfriend and I started it, and we played 5 hours, and we're like, we don't know if we like the game because we don't know half of the things we can do, but we're interested and want to keep going. That thing of, oh, this is a long investment, but it's what we want to make.
And then Sega Genesis Classics comes to Switch December 7th. Fans can enjoy over 50 favorites across every genre on the go. The Revenge of Shinobi, Streets of Rage 2, Gunstar Heroes, Phantasy Star 2, Golden Axe, Sonic the Hedgehog, and many more. Because you just can't get away from the Sega Genesis Classics.
Never.
The Mega Drive Classics are going to chase you down till the day you die.
It's coming to Ouya next week.
Oh my god. Time to check in with the readers.
Hey, readers.
Reclusive Dragon writes into kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, could you imagine if the N64 Classic had a limited edition clear green or purple version?
I'd buy that purple version immediately.
I like how he says limited version. Like, it's not, these things aren't limited to begin with. But yeah, if they're smart.
Yes.
I want to believe in an N64 Classic.
Me too.
I understand the controllers are more complicated, they cost more, all that stuff. That's the first one, personally, that I have an affinity for and an attachment to that if you were going to put on N64 Classic, now granted, based on the games probably, I would be like, I want to buy that.
Yeah.
I want to buy that. And then if you start putting in the translucent colors as limited editions, people are going to lose their mind.
Well, like the idea that you could even buy extra controllers
and old N64
ones. All the different colors and stuff. That would be a lot of money at least.
What would you need on it to buy it? Like, what pushes you over the edge? Because like, it gets into the licensing stuff, right?
Yeah, like Banjo can't be on there, and those are two of my favorite games.
I want all the old WWF games, but I know those won't be on there.
Yeah, like I wonder what could happen with Star Wars on there. I'll play Mario 64 again, of course.
Sure.
I'm never gonna say no.
GoldenEye, can they even do Perfect Dark? It gets so weird, and that whole generation
is in a weird place.
Yeah, I would love it. People would lose their mind, and they'd sell a lot. But you already knew that. Ludwig from Vienna writes in and says, questions for Mr. Dornbush. Number one, are you satisfied with the list of PlayStation Classic included games?
Going one by one? Yes and no.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is there enough on there for you to care about that?
There are, because there's a few on there that I didn't play, and so I'm curious to try them out. But it is that thing of, I actually wrote a piece yesterday about it, of like, the classic lineup was doomed from the start to have what I remember as the PlayStation, because Spyro was never going to be on there. Crash was never going to be on there. Like, all these remakes and stuff have really hampered what can be on there.
Yeah.
And there are still a lot of, I think, interesting games that I want to try on there, and things that probably wouldn't have gotten the spotlight otherwise. maybe they could have just made more games beyond the thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's... It didn't make me go, oh, now I'm buying one of these.
Right.
It wasn't.
I think having Metal Gear on there is the biggest one that most people were. Absolutely. And I shouldn't say the biggest one because there's also Final Fantasy VII. But there was something on there where people were like, ah, there you go. Yes, that's why I need it or I want it. Because I mean, Metal Gear is my PS1 memory.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's like, oh, that's cool. But I'm still like, I just don't. You know what I mean? Like I've in swag bags before I've been giving like the NES Classic and stuff. I'm just like, oh, this is, here you go, Tim. Like, this isn't for me. Like, sure. You go play this stuff.
I think my thing with the PlayStation Classic is it seemed like a totally obvious thing to announce.
Yeah.
I just wish that it does all the same things as an SNES Classic does, which means it also still has all the same faults.
Mm.
And there are just quality of life things and additions I feel like they could have made. Like, you don't need to keep the list so small, and you don't need to do some of the other things that they do with it. Like, I wish there was PlayStation Online support.
Sure.
If all the, I know it would take more investment, but if all these had trophies,
oh my God. I'd play this. Can you imagine if you do? Oh my God.
That would be incredible.
What? You don't even... You're dreaming.
Oh, yeah.
You're
dreaming. I know, but yeah. I'm just saying, like, it would make something like this go from being just a novelty to, oh, I really want that.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how it sells. I mean, yeah. I think people like having the small stuff. So.
Oh, yeah.
People love tiny little things. Number two is what PS1 games would you want included? But, like, you already said it. You understand. The
remake. Yeah, I like Crash Nitro Kart or Crash Team Racing. Excuse me, Tim. I'm sorry. CTR would be an obvious one that could go on there. But, again, probably... Activision rights, who knows what's going on with the game. Yeah.
And then his final one I do enjoy, because you are the host of Podcast Beyond now. Are PlayStation trophies really a big deal?
Yes.
Thank you. That's my man right there. That's it.
Yes,
knocked out of the park. That's how you answer it. What level are you these days?
I'm not as high as I'd like to be on trophy level.
I just realized as I asked that question, I'm still, all my stuff's still locked. Because I did the Red Dead review embargo, so everything was locked off.
Oh,
I got to undo that.
I think I'm at 19 right now.
Okay.
Not great.
Okay.
But
no, yeah, it's an embarrassment. Yeah, that's embarrassment to Podcast Beyond.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. That's I'll okay. leave.
No, you got one more question. All Paul from an undisclosed location writes in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, what's up, Beyond Senior and Beyond Junior? My question is about video games as careers. Simply, how did you know? I love video games and I play all the time, but so do both of you. How could you tell that video games were more than just a side passion and you wanted to do all you could to make a living out of writing, talking, critiquing them? Best of luck and the continued success for you both, Paul. Everybody's heard my story. You go.
Oh, but I like hearing the story.
Go.
All right. So for me, it wasn't honestly just gaming. It was entertainment as a whole. Like, before I came to IGN, I was at Entertainment Weekly covering...
Which is crazy.
Everything across the board there.
How long were you there?
I was there for about a year and a half.
Because I remember when you... That's how you stood out to me originally, is that I would see somebody tweeting us, and I think you were verified from it.
Yeah,
and
like, yeah, that's
it
would
be
what
like,
caused it.
Oh, yeah. Who's this Entertainment Weekly guy listens to Podcast Beyond? What is going on?
They like games there? Ugh. But it was always that thing of like...
Probably has only 19-level trophies, you know what I mean?
Not a real gamer. But from the start, like, the core passion, I think, for me was writing. Like, that's really where it all started. And I loved entertainment so much, and movies and TV and games. I loved talking about them with my friends and everything. And that just seemed like the obvious thing of, what if I take all these thoughts and actually do something with them and apply that? And it just seemed like the coolest way to go toward that for me. So it was always a clear focus. I don't know if I've said this publicly, in high school, my guidance counselor was asking, it was that time where you're like getting ready to apply for colleges. And he's like, so what are you looking forward to, like, for college? What's the, like, 5-year plan for you and all these things? I was like, well, I'm going to graduate here, going to graduate from college, and then I'm going to go work at IGN.
Yeah.
And that was like the plan from being as a kid. And
that's
honestly,
awesome.
A lot of it was the enthusiasm. I know I talked a bit about on Beyond with this, but like the enthusiasm you guys shared on Beyond and on IGN as a whole made me think, oh, this is something worth investing into.
Sure.
Was like, because there are people in this industry, but every industry, who are jaded by a lot of it.
And totally.
But so much of it came across, especially with you, as like genuine enthusiasm and genuine love for exploring these stories and these games. And so for me, that was what really stuck with me and why I wanted to chase it.
What did you go to school for?
Like, what? So originally I was going to school for film and journalism, because at NYU, if you take journalism, you have to double major.
Oh.
But the first like four classes were all like, here's how to write 101. So I actually just dropped the journalism major and focused on games with like some minor in video game stuff. Cause that was a big thing for them. And largely I busted my ass at the newspaper there.
Yeah.
And the newspaper was what I went to college for. The major was sort of a secondhand thing at that point. But really it was just trying to hone down my understanding of like how to think about art, how to critique it, how to praise it and all these things. And then also working in an environment of you're part of a team, you're part of a group of writers and editors. And what does that mean? And how can you improve your skills, but also the team as a whole? So that was really my focus then.
That's awesome. Has there been any moment while you've been on this journey where you're like, you don't know if it's worth it, or even, you know, you get to IGN, you meet Goldfarb, but
and I was like, well, I made a bad choice. I moved across country.
I made a huge mistake.
No, I mean, there are definitely days where it's like you put all your effort into maybe chasing a story and something doesn't work out the way you want it to, or you're putting all this work into a thing. And then again, you're part of a team. And so your thing may not get to shine the way that you want it to. And there are those days where I like to describe it as I have the Catholic guilt and the Jewish anxiety just melted into one terrible brain. Yeah. And so there will be days where I let that really get to me.
Sure.
Nothing in particular necessarily stands out, but it will be the thing of like, at EW, games weren't the focus for them. And so I tried to really be pushing these things, but it wouldn't be the focus for my higher up editors. But and I'd be like, maybe am I off the mark here
right, and things like that.
But something would come around and keep me going.
Awesome.
And yeah.
It is time to squad up. This is where one of you writes into kindoffunny.com/KFGD. Give me your name, username, platform of choice, and why you need help in a video game. I read it here. The best friends come and find you, and everybody plays games together. Oh. Today, Malik needs help on PlayStation 4. Malik's PSN name is Assassin-Malik, M-A-L-I-K. This Saturday, I decided to gather a few friends and do my own extra live stream. I wanted to reach out and see if any Kinda Funny Games Daily best friends would want to help keep my energy high on Saturday as I play Destiny 2, Overwatch, Brawlhalla, Fortnite, and Black Ops 4. I figured since the majority of my time would be playing at home, it would be cool to include some Kinda Funny best friends in the stream. Thanks for the inspiration. You guys made me do this. Well, Malik, we'd love to help you, but of course you're going against the Kinda Funny extra live stream, so no one supports him.
Oh no.
No one help him or no, I'm kidding. If you want to play some games with Malik and help the big beautiful kids during Extra Life, Assassin-Malik on that there PSN. All right. I was like, oh, nobody, no, there were no bad Beyond names, or not Beyond names, no bad PSN names today. And then I forgot about you're wrong. We ask people watching live, Dornbush.
Yes.
On twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames to go to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong and tell us what we screw up as we screw it up so we can set
probably
the record straight. Huh? You think so?
Yeah.
I didn't feel like we had that much in the I didn't feel like there was that much to argue today.
No.
Look at that. Oh. I was going to look at I was like, look at that. Six. And then a seventh popped up as I said it. Like, let's see what we got here now. Nope. I don't want to do that. Kebabs like, I mean, if you want to get technical. I don't want to get technical. Mm. You can shove it, Kebabs. Oh, God, Lord of Pwn, fuck you. On the topic of this year almost being over, it's exactly 32 weeks till E3 opens and 8 weeks till Christmas.
Thanks.
Yeah,
thank you.
Lord of Pwn says, it should be noted that the Switch has now sold more units than GameCube's lifetime sales. That is a great point.
Forever in my heart, the GameCube.
Ross, I'm going to read it out loud because I want to make sure. PS Now is not included in PS Plus, same as Game Pass is not included in Xbox Live Gold. I don't see how you imagine PSN Now being included in PS Plus unless you want a significant price increase.
I think they could add it for a take a little bit of a hit and
to have make it
to
be,
combine them.
They've lost. The thing about that, and I agree with you, right,
yeah,
is that they've lost the narrative.
Yes.
They bought Gaikai and we were all like, this is going to be awesome. PlayStation Now launched and it was like, oh, this isn't that great. And it's just been something that's happening.
Yeah.
And so even they got a boost when it was like, you can download games now. But even that's been something nobody talks about anymore.
Totally,
Pass, I mean, just think about how good Game Pass is at staying in Kinda Funny Games Daily. PS Now pops up and I see a thing from Sid of like, here's a whole bunch of stuff. He just did one recently of like, PS Now, it's Halloween. Here's a bunch of horror games that are out that you could get on PS Now.
Yeah.
But I feel like Game Pass is way more better at being exciting.
It's always in the discussion, especially with what they do with first-party games on there, too.
Yeah, that exactly.
It's just such a smart thing, and I think for PS Plus to succeed in the long run, and if streaming really matters to them, you need to incorporate it into a larger subscription service.
Zaire pops in with two Xbox things. Also out today, Just Cause, Castlevania Lords of Shadow 1 and 2, and Mirror of Fate HD are all backwards compatible on Xbox One. And then, as we were doing this, I guess, new dated, Xbox Live Gold for November are Battlefield 1, Race the Sun, Assassin's Creed 1, and Dante's Inferno. I imagine that'll still get a new story tomorrow on Games Daily, as I think that's worth it. But I'll be at the kids' hospital, so I don't know. And then...
I won't be here.
Huh, yeah, you won't be here. You don't have to worry about this at all. Striker 14 says, Greg, you're wrong about there being no bad PSN names. I submitted one on Friday and again on Monday, but you didn't read it. Is there something wrong with the Kinda Funny Games Daily forum? Time restraints, ha? Or my story was just the worst? JK, keep up the great work, Beyond. At every morning when I go in there, I delete all the stuff from the day before.
Sure.
So you'd have to resubmit over and over again. You might say, Greg, well, why don't you just save them in another thing? And I would just say, that's just too much work.
That's a lot.
That's just too much work. If we have a bad PSN in, we got it. If we don't, we don't. Who cares? Right, Cool Greg?
Yep.
The show rolls on, Cool Greg. Cool Greg's cool.
I find him very cool.
Jonathan Dornbush, you're cool as Great. Well.
Oh, thank you.
Where do you want to send people to keep up with you?
You can keep up with me and all my Kingdom Hearts ramblings at Twitter or Instagram at JM Dornbush. So just JM, my last name. I'm pretty much just there. And then obviously Beyond every week goes live on Wednesdays at beyond.ign.com for new episodes. I'm leaving here immediately to go record an episode, actually.
Who's on today?
Just the classic team.
Oh, the classic?
Yeah, classic team of Ryan Clements and myself.
You got Chris Roper, Jeremy Dunham, Jeff Haynes.
Brian and Max have been back from, they've been doing some travel.
Yeah, Austin and Japan, right?
Yeah, there, so the place, they're back. So we just kind of are going to come back to that. Yeah, should be fun.
Well, I'm so proud of you, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Keep the Beyonds loud over there for me, okay?
Always.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you didn't know, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday in a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, be part of the show, kindoffunny.com/KFGD with your questions, comments, concerns, bad PSN names for a little bit longer, and everything else under the video game sun. Then watch us record it live, twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. Watch it later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. And listen on podcast services around the globe. Until next time. It's been our pleasure to serve you. Kevin's back with the beer.
Finally.